This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey everybody, how's it going? Thanks for joining me this afternoon. I am Orin McIntyre. So, very interesting development with Elon Musk and Twitter, or X as he calls it now. I'm never calling it X. Sorry, it's Twitter. It's always going to be Twitter to me. But of course, we know that Twitter is a really interesting social media platform. Social media platforms are very powerful tools. They've changed the way that our elections work. They have changed the way that we think about our leaders getting put into office. But X particular has a way of changing political opinion. Facebook, Instagram, all of these things matter, but the way that Twitter is set up really drives it into the hearts and minds of the opinion class, the media class, the journalists, those that actually create the information consensus. And in a world where popular sovereignty creates legitimacy, the ability to control the information that the average voter sees becomes a critical weapon in the arsenal of the ruling class. And so having something like X on your side has been really important for many people who want to continue to keep their brand of politics, their worldview in the prime position. However, Elon Musk taking over this platform seems to have sent a lot of these people spinning out of control. They're very worried about the fact that Elon seems to not always dance to the tune that they're playing. And this means that they can't reliably use X as a way to leverage their position. In fact, their opponents might have access to this. And this seems to have come to a head in the country of Brazil. Brazil is a country that has been in a lot of turmoil and is very worried about the fact that social media might play a role in their politics going forward. And so they've gotten to a legal battle with Elon Musk. They put him under investigation. They've made threats to him that he needs to go ahead and let them censor the platform. But it looks like Elon Musk is refusing. Now, we're going to talk about the history behind that. But more importantly, to me, we're going to talk about the way that Elon Musk has become a rogue non-state actor and the way that endangers state sovereignty. Because Brazil's situation is interesting, but I think for us in the United States, the far more interesting implications are what this means going forward for social media and elections, because it's very clear in the 2024 election that social media is going to play a massive role and that the federal government is already interested in cracking down here in the United States as well. So we're going to dive into all of this, guys. But before we do, let's go ahead and hear a little bit about ISI. Universities today aren't just neglecting real education, they're actively undermining it. And we can't let them get away with it. America was made for an educated and engaged citizenry. The Intercollegiate Studies Institute is here to help. ISI offers programs and opportunities for conservative students across the country. ISI understands that conservatives and right-of-center students feel isolated on college campuses and that you're often fighting for your own reputation, dignity, and future. Through ISI, you can learn about what Russell Kirk called the permanent things, the philosophical and political teachings that shaped and made Western civilization great. ISI offers many opportunities to jumpstart your career. They have fellowships at some of the nation's top conservative publications like National Review, The American Conservative, and The College Thinker. If you're a graduate student, ISI offers funding opportunities to sponsor the next great generation of college professors. Through ISI, you can work with conservative thinkers who are making a difference, thinkers like Chris Rufo, who currently has an ISI researcher helping him with his book. But perhaps most importantly, ISI offers college students a community of people that can help them grow. If you're a college student, ISI can help you start a student organization or a student newspaper or meet other like-minded students at their various conferences and events. ISI is here to educate the next generation of great Americans. To learn more, go to ISI.org. That's ISI.org. All right. So to understand this, I think first we need a little bit of context. Now, I'm not going to pretend to be some kind of expert about Brazil's history or its electoral politics or even the ins and outs of its system. But we do need to have a very basic understanding of what happened in Brazil before we can then understand the implications that this has for other Western countries and the United States in particular. So in Brazil, obviously, you had the Bolsonaro election, and Bolsonaro had a lot of news media around him, a lot of people whinging about him, very concerned because he was supposed to be the Trump of Brazil. He was supposed to be this guy who was coming in. He had the populist wave. He was going to challenge the status quo. He was very good on social media. He made a lot of bombastic statements that scared the institutions and the establishment there. And he was running against a guy named Lula da Silva. Now, Lula had been president of Brazil, I believe, twice already. And he was actually running for his election in prison because he had been indicted on a money laundering scam. Apparently, there's a lot of collusion inside the Brazilian government, a lot of people siphoning off money, especially from the state's gasoline development, its oil business. And so he had been indicted and had actually been charged with this. He was sentenced to, I believe, something like 12 years, though he only ended up serving a few years of that sentence, or even less than 2 years, before he ended up getting that expunged by the Supreme Court. Now, he lost to Bolsonaro. Bolsonaro won their first election. And Bolsonaro ends up coming in, again, feeling a lot of pressure for being the Trump of Brazil there. A lot of people worry that he's going to dismantle the bureaucracy. And you'll see a lot of themes here between the United States and Brazil. There's an entrenched bureaucratic system that's tied heavily to one party. That party seems to stay in power forever. And Bolsonaro ends up taking over. He wants to dismantle many parts of that bureaucracy that is portrayed by the media as a danger to the state. He's trying to get rid of all the restrictions that are placed on the private sector. He's trying to sell off Brazil, this kind of thing. When his supporters would say, no, he's trying to get rid of all these entrenched interests that have taken over the democracy, that have kept it from actually representing the people. Either way, whatever you want to believe about that, that is kind of the battle there between Bolsonaro and his version of the deep state that exists in the Brazilian government. Now, Bolsonaro ends up losing to Lula in the 2022 election. You may have seen the famous picture of Bolsonaro eating a bowl of KFC in defeat after kind of basically fleeing that situation. He lost, and there was a lot of accusations of voter fraud, a lot of accusations that the election was not legitimate, that the Supreme Court was helping to put their thumb on the scales because they didn't like Bolsonaro. And so they went ahead and kind of muscled him out, is the accusation, and restored kind of their candidate, their preferred candidate, with all of the ties to the bureaucracy and the corruption in the power. And so Bolsonaro ends up getting forced out. And since then, the government has basically recognized that they don't want social media to be a weapon against them. They want to make sure that going forward, another Bolsonaro can't happen. They don't want someone who's good at social media being able to organize, go around the official government channels, kind of bring the anger of the people to bear on the incumbent government. They want to make sure that none of that can happen again. And so the Supreme Court, which also kind of doubles, I guess there's some overlap between the main Supreme Court and then like the election Supreme Court, and one of the justices on the main Supreme Court also oversees the electoral Supreme Court. Again, I'm not pretending to be any kind of expert on their system. I'm just trying to give you a general idea of the way this is set up. And so the Supreme Court has been putting pressure on social media platforms all over the place to basically go ahead and do lots of censorship, sell all their data, open up any private messages, or, you know, go ahead and dox their users so that the government can keep tabs on everyone that opposes them, so that they can go ahead and make sure that no one is making any plans or saying anything behind their back. And so they've basically gotten Google and all these other social media and tech sites to give over their information, to capitulate and do the censorship and everything else. But Twitter has stood firm. And that means that they've kind of become enemy number one of one of the judges on the Supreme Court, who has attempted to go ahead and, again, put all these bans into place, make sure that all these accounts are suppressed. Now, Elon Musk has said that he does not like this. He thinks that this is a violation of the rights of the people of Brazil. And he believes also that this violates the Brazilian Constitution. And so instead of complying with what the judge has said, Elon Musk has basically said, I'm going to go ahead and lift these restrictions. I don't care what the blowback is going to be. I don't care if we lose all of our revenue. I don't care if we have to go ahead and close our offices in Brazil because the legal ramifications could fall on our employees and everything. I want to go ahead and fight for free speech. I'm going to go ahead and make this decision. Now, a lot of people, myself included, frankly, are like, good on Elon Musk, right? He's standing up to these people. It looks like a corrupt government. Again, I don't know anything about the Brazilian government, really. I'm not an expert on it. I'm not going to pretend like I became one because I did research for the story. But it does seem like the current Brazilian regime is corrupt. It does seem like they are cracking down on the freedoms of the people. The few people who I know who are in Brazil say that this is the case. That there was a lot of corruption, that there was a lot of falsification with the elections in Brazil, that their freedoms are being cracked down on. And so it seems like Elon Musk is standing up to a corrupt government. And again, what's interesting is he's saying he's going to do this in the name of the people of Brazil, that the Constitution is being violated and he's going to stand up on their behalf. Now, that creates a very interesting scenario, because while you might agree with the actions that that Elon Musk is taking, from a power politics analysis, this is a imposition on state sovereignty. Now, I want to be really clear here, because there was some confusion when I went ahead and explained this on Twitter. There was I did a big thread and it went very wide. And some people were angry because they thought I was supporting Elon Musk. Some people were angry because they thought I was supporting the Brazilian government. It just goes to show you that whenever a thread like that goes wide on Twitter, it really just becomes a Rorschach test. But the point is, I'm not trying to now advocate for either side. What I'm trying to explain is a phenomenon that is going to have a very serious impact on politics, basically across the globe going forward. And so I want to explain this dynamic. I'm not arguing for state sovereignty. I'm not arguing for corporations having any particular powers here. I'm simply explaining the dynamic that is going to continue to unfold. It's already unfolded and is going to continue to unfold. And I think Brazil is a really interesting test case. And on this program, I like to explain the theory behind what is happening. I like to explain the mechanics behind what is happening. And so I think Brazil gives us a good case we can study, so we can actually apply this theory. We can look directly, we can take the things that are in the theoretical realm, the realm of political power and political theory, and we can directly apply them to the things that are happening in real time, and they can help us better understand the world, so that if this happens in our own country, and I think it probably will, then we will have an understanding of what is happening here. So Elon Musk, of course, is just the owner of a corporation. He owns X. He bought it. He bought it from people who had very different ideas about the way it should be run, and he changed it. And Elon Musk bought it with the explicit purpose of changing the culture of the company. He probably could have spent his money elsewhere on far more lucrative things, but Elon Musk understood something that unfortunately a lot of people on the right don't understand, that wielding power is more important than dollars. And his dollars allowed him to buy a piece of power. And so when he bought that piece of power, when he bought a node out of the information network that was critical to the way that the public filters its understanding of the world, he was buying a piece of political power in a way that you can't even buy it if you directly bribe like a congressman. It is a very important move. And Elon Musk very much understood this. So he might end up turning X into a highly profitable thing. He might end up making Twitter, you know, this huge cash cow for him. But his primary concern seemed to be controlling this flow of information, taking something that was almost entirely controlled by the left and putting one piece in his hands. Now, a lot of people don't like Elon Musk. They don't think that he's really right wing. I think, okay, fair. There are many things he's not right wing about. They don't trust him. They think that he's actually just a creature of the regime. I would disagree with that. I don't think Elon Musk is entirely, some kind of social conservative. I don't think he's aligned with your traditional right wing political project. He's not going to pass your ideology test. But I think he is an opponent of the regime, and I think that while he does often have to work inside of its framework, and he does have to go ahead and use many of their conventions in order to get contracts and make money and everything else that he does working with the state, I think that he does have an opposing ideology, even if it's not a explicitly right-wing ideology. And so that makes him an interesting actor. Even if he's not completely on the side of the right, he is a rogue elite in his own way. And that's what's really interesting for me. So when Elon Musk buys this piece of X, this piece of the information system, what he's doing is he is throwing a wrench into the hegemonic control that the kind of wider global American empire has had on the consensus manufacturing apparatus of the United States and the wider Western world. He understands the critical role. Again, X, while it has a much smaller social media profile than many other platforms, it is one that is wired directly into kind of the dopamine feedback system of people who are journalists, people who craft narratives and opinions and help to change the way that people understand events. And so that means that things that happen on Twitter tend to flow outward into all kinds of news articles and TV shows and everything else. And so it's a very powerful platform. And what we're seeing with Elon's defiance of the Brazilian court is a non-state actor who's directly challenging state sovereignty. You have to understand that this power has, of course, existed for a long time. In fact, this is something I explained in my upcoming book, The Total State, that the state apparatus has grown well beyond the formal government, the things we think of in America, the legislative branch, the judicial branch, the executive branch. These are the three branches of government, and that's all the government is. That's just not true at all. The government is also the media. The government is also the university system, the public education system, the banking system. It's all this other stuff as well. The government is not just the things that are enumerated in the first three articles of the Constitution. And so these new powers have been altering state decisions for a long time. Now, again, even that is not new. Of course, you can think of, I don't know, you know, the holy orders in the Crusades, or you can think about the British trading company and its impact on other states. There have been many cases where these corporations or orders, or, you know, even the Vatican, if you want, like, these have had influences on states. They have been able to, in their own ways, challenge state sovereignty. So this is not the first time that non-state actors have been able to challenge state sovereignty, but they usually had to be really big and really powerful to do that. And they certainly couldn't do it through a press of a button. They had to have a very real and very direct impact on either the finances, culture, or even the actual, you know, physical safety of a region. You know, gunboat diplomacy works because you go in there and you threaten to blow everything up if they don't buy your stuff, right? If they don't open up their markets to you. And so they had to have a very real kind of injection of direct classical power into a sphere, into a sovereign state, in order to have an impact on it. But now, through the digital information delivery, that impact can be, you know, much less, it's as direct, it's as powerful, but it doesn't have to be as obvious. It doesn't have to be as formal as it used to have to be. And the United States and the kind of the its global empire has been using this for a long time. The CIA and many other parts of the United States government and other Western governments have been using these non-state actors to go ahead and manipulate color revolutions, things like the Arab Spring, for a long time. They've been using platforms like Twitter to go ahead and inject themselves into kind of the consciousness of the people during an election cycle, that kind of thing. I mean, this is fundamentally why Vladimir Zelensky is in power in Ukraine, was because they were able to use these forces. So this is, again, nothing new, and it's not even the modern version has been around for a while as well. But the fact that Elon Musk is doing this is different because, like I said, I don't think he's directly aligned with the interests of the current ruling class. I don't think that he and the global American empire see eye to eye. And that means that he's the first guy to really step outside of their blessing to go ahead and do this. One of the reasons that all these other state non-state actors could get away with manipulating elections and everything else in foreign countries is that they had the implicit backing, or sometimes the explicit backing, of the global American empire. Everyone knew that if you actually went after these organizations, if you tried to censor these social media sites or other things that are affecting your election, that the United States was going to come in, and maybe NATO was going to come in and say, oh, look, you're anti-democracy. Look, you're against all free speech and all this stuff. And the might of the kind of global American empire, the machine, was going to come down on you. And so they didn't dare stand up against this. But like I said, Elon is not aligned, I think, with the regime in the same way. And so the fact that he's willing to go ahead and take these actions means that the game changes in a very significant way. I want to talk about how that impacts Brazil, their state sovereignty, and how that could go ahead and impact the elections in the United States. But before we do that, guys, let me tell you about your absolute moral duty to hire based people through New Founding. Hey guys, I need to tell you about today's sponsor, New Founding Talent. Look, we all know that the job market is a disaster right now. Based people can't find good companies to work for, and good companies can't find anybody to get the job done. The competency crisis is very, very real. So how do we get these two incredibly important groups together? We need organizations like New Founding. New Founding has created a network of high excellence professionals who are seeking to join grounded American businesses. These are individuals often in elite organizations who are ready for a team and a mission that supports their values instead of working against them. Aligned companies are already using this network to hire high trust, exceptional individuals who can match the culture and mission of their teams. So if you're looking for better employees to build a better world, you need to go ahead and apply for access to the New Founding Talent Network at newfounding.com/talent. You'll get connected with candidates who will build your business. That's newfounding.com/talent. Check it out today. All right. So like I said, I think Elon wielding this power is very different than it has previously been used by the global American empire, by kind of the regime. And that's because he is not aligned, and this makes him a rogue actor. The global American empire has been worried about this for a while. They've understood that this is a very real threat because they have deployed these tactics in foreign countries. They understood how well they could work, and they wanted to make sure that someone didn't do the same thing to them. They recognize, well, if we can manipulate elections with these tools, then someone could go ahead and use these tools to break our monopoly on information inside our own sphere, just like we're using it to break the monopoly on state sovereignty inside other spheres. And if you need someone to lay this out for you, Mike Binns did a great job of doing this on the Tucker Carlson show. He did that really great episode that went viral, explaining how basically all of the security apparatus that had been deployed to create these color revolutions abroad has now been turned domestically. And for the same reason that the Brazilian government locked down, right? They saw Bolsonaro is their Trump. And the problem with Trump is that Trump comes in and he threatens to actually start tearing apart kind of the pillars of the American system that keep the ruling class in power, the foreign wars, the immigration, these kind of things. At the end, he finally starts to realize that the problem is the bureaucracy, the deep state, but it's too late. He should have figured that out earlier. But hopefully, if he gets another chance, that problem will be solved. Point being, Bolsonaro created a similar atmosphere that he was going to come in and tear up all these pieces of state power. And so they both have the same reaction. You know, they both need to shut down the avenues for social media, for the sharing of information, because if they don't, then the same tools that they have used to mess with elections in foreign countries could come home and impact the United States. Now, you have to understand something about the way that our current system works. We talk about democracy or representative republics if you're a stickler for the constitutional language that doesn't actually get applied today. But we talk about the ability of popular sovereignty to be the legitimating mechanism for a government. If the people say the government is legitimate, that's what makes it legitimate. That's why elections matter so much, because they carry the voice and the weight of the people. However, we have to realize that if you're a real ruling class, like if you're a bunch of leaders who have built a giant Leviathan full of power, which has the ability to crush your enemies at a moment's notice, you don't just hand that over to your opponent because you lost an election. That's just not something any ruling class does that's worth its salt. So the very idea that we have in the United States, so that you have this kind of peaceful transfer of power after an election, and one side that like has declared the other side their mortal enemy and says that they're trying to like eliminate their way of life, just kind of hands over the keys to the government, that's not real. That's fake, because the real power sits inside these entrenched bureaucracies, just like Brazil has this problem. And so instead, even when someone who opposes them, like Trump, is in power, the ruling class kind of continues to get to use it, its power during that time. It insulates itself from the effects of democracy to make sure that it stays in power. And one of the ways it helps to insulate itself from the natural turnover that you would think would follow in a democracy is that they need to go ahead and control information, because in a democracy, the average person is just not going to have time to understand what's going on. They're not going to have a time to evaluate each issue. Even if they had the time, they just wouldn't have the ability. And so in order to be an informed voter and make their choice, they have to rely on the accounts given to them by the news media. And so if you're an elite class that wants to stay in power, then you make sure to go ahead and control the information that people get. You control elections and their outcomes by controlling the flow of information inside your borders. And that means that really the elections are determined more by the ability to create the frame of information, which is done through, of course, the news media, but social media, the internet, universities, many of the things that even create the concepts that we talk about every day are creating a framework that allows people to manipulate the results of any given electoral contest. And so this has become a key to state sovereignty. The governments need to be able to control the information their populace has, because their ability to stay in power comes from the votes of their populace. And so they need to make sure that the votes of their populace reliably fall in a given direction, that they understand issues and options. They manipulate the Overton window in a particular way, so that even if you elect someone like a Republican, you get like a Mitt Romney, he's not really coming in and smashing anything that you build. He's not really going to use the power of the state to punish his enemies. He's a safe, controllable kind of opposition that's not really going to go ahead and mix everything up. You don't want Trumps, you don't want Bolsonaros, or maybe even like a Ron DeSantis. You want safe, controlled guys who don't understand how the system works, or mainly agree with how the system works and only wants slight reform to the system. And that way, when you go ahead and deliver your talking points and everything through media, everything is nicely packaged. You can make guys like Mitt Romney sound like extremists, and then you've more or less controlled the entire window in which the election can take place. However, if there is an entity that can come in and change the opinions of people, can open up the opinions of people, can give them information that they otherwise would not receive, that you don't want them to receive, that your larger bureaucratic state apparatus doesn't want them to get, if you can go ahead and have something like that enter into your country, that's a real danger to your power. And so Elon has this ability to get around all of the power of the state. You see, the power of most of these states is diffuse and oligarchical in a way. It's a lot of people who are corrupt, hiding inside of bureaucracies and theoretically private corporations. but all sharing the same profit motives, all sharing kind of the same background as an elite ruling class, going to the same cocktail parties, graduating from the same elite universities, all reading the same, you know, publications and that kind of thing, sharing the same values. And so the governments there are formed by these people. And Elon's ability to break in there is a huge deal because he can disrupt the way that they generally control the opinions of that class. Those people usually are spreading their responsibility across that oligarchy, that every decision they make ends up getting checked by kind of this loose network of opinion-making institutions. So you might have Harvard and Yale and the Pentagon and CNN and all these things, and they might have slightly different motives. They might disagree on a few things here or there, but more or less, their cohesive class and cultural interests keeps them on the same page. They check each other. There's a distributed understanding of what's acceptable. Elon gets to act basically as an autocrat. He gets to act as a dictator. He doesn't have to check with CNN. He doesn't have to check with the DOD in most cases. He doesn't have to check with Harvard or anything to decide what he's going to do. He owns the company and he makes the rules. And so this autocratic ability to go ahead and rule on his own without having to check the bureaucracy, to go through kind of the consensus manufacturing apparatus of the global American empire, allows him to step into these situations and say, I don't care. I don't care what I'm supposed to do. I don't care what the other, you know, reputable organizations are saying. I'm making an executive decision, and I am going to go ahead and say, no, I am not censoring people in Brazil. I am not shutting down these accounts. I am not handing over this information. And I don't care what you say, and I don't care what your judge says. I'm making this decision. Now, that's really interesting because Elon Musk is not a representative of Brazil. He doesn't represent the Brazilian people. He hasn't been elected to anything. He doesn't hold some title of nobility in Brazil. Like, in any way that you legitimate power inside Brazil, Elon Musk does not have it, right? And again, I'm not speaking against what Elon did. I'm not saying that he's doing something wrong here. I'm just observing the fact that if you believe in, you know, democracy or even the divine right of kings, whatever you believe in, it's very clear through all the political formulas that have legitimated state power, Elon is not a legitimate state actor in that way. He is a rogue elite who has his own base of power outside the reach of the Brazilian government. And he has said, I'm going to go ahead and make a decision on what the Constitution of Brazil means and what the Brazilian people want. And I'm going to enforce that decision on my platform. And you can go pound sand. Right now, again, I'm not on the side of the Brazilian Supreme Court here at all. But if there's one organization that has the right to adjudicate what the Constitution of Brazil means, or what the Brazilian people means, want, then you would think it would be like the president of Brazil, or it would be the Supreme Court of Brazil. But instead, it's actually Elon Musk who gets to go ahead and step in. And that's a big threat to political power. That's a big threat to break the monopoly that these bureaucratic state apparatuses have on their people. It breaks the control that they have on the information, which could therefore impact the elections. And this is kind of the big selling point of Brazil's ability to do this. This is what the president and the Supreme Court have invoked as their right to go ahead and censor these people and lock down on information. They've made the same arguments that the American government is making now. Oh, it's misinformation. You have to watch out for disinformation and misinformation. They're looking to endanger democracy. It's all the same arguments. It's all the same rhetoric, because it's all part of the kind of more global managerial system of managed democracy. That's really what's happening here. And so that, you know, they all are kind of saying the same thing because they're all running the same scam. They're all running the same type of government. It's all the same structure. Obviously, Brazil and America will have differences, but you understand what I'm saying. There's a similarity in class interests and governmental structures that is adapted to the modern world, the way that we consume information, the way that we understand state legitimacy. There has been a particular form of state that has arisen because of these factors. And they're all relying on kind of the same things to keep control of their people. And the primary thing they need to do to keep control is to control information. And Elon's ability to step in and say, I don't care, right? Like, I don't care what the consensus among the legitimating organizations is. I don't care what, you know, the even the formal government apparatus says. I'm just going to make this decision. And because I think that free speech is good, and I think you're denying it to people, and I think this is what's good for the people of Brazil. And I'm going to act unilaterally as like an information dictator to come in there. And ironically, you know, as a dictator, free the speech of these people you're trying to oppress, right? And to be clear, this is exactly the kind of thing that the United States has done through social media platforms and, you know, intelligence agencies have done using information to get rid of people they didn't like, to get rid of governments and regimes they didn't like. They did exactly this kind of thing where they went in and they said, well, we're going to go ahead and free up the lines of communication and information. And that's going to allow people who otherwise would not get a hearing, you know, I would say, to come in and speak their mind. And that's going to allow people, you know, to free up and voice their opposition. And this is going to change the way that elections work inside, these states. And we're going to have a different outcome. And the people we want are going to get in power. And so Elon Musk is kind of getting to do this, but he's getting to do it without the approval of the State Department, without the approval of the DHS or the CIA or, you know, any other bureaucracies. He just gets to act because he owns the company. He's the one that gets to go ahead and make these decisions. And so the nature of these modern states can't allow this to happen, right? This is a huge problem for them because they rely on information monopolies. They rely on their ability to control the discussions, to have their democratic elections inside very specific and small frames where you're not actually allowed to have any real oppositional position, right? It's just you can choose from Pepsi or Coke, but that's it. We're definitely not going to talk about, you know, RC Cola or anything else. And so there's a very limited range of acceptable opinion and people that can go ahead and run against the government because they're never really running against the government. And so Elon's ability to break that monopoly is very powerful. And of course, the United States is watching all of this stuff because all of this is like a test case for what could possibly happen here. We know how tight the intelligence agencies were, how they were working with social media companies, including Twitter, because of the Twitter files. Twitter files have shown us how willing under the previous management that the social media company was to go ahead and work with all these different intelligence agencies and collude to shut down talk about the pandemic and the election and all kinds of other things, censor the information about Hunter Biden's laptop before the election, all the basic election interference they were willing to get involved in the name of preventing election interference, because it's kind of in the eye of beholder, right? If you think that having the truth about Hunter Biden's laptop out there could mess with Joe Biden's ability to get elected, and you think that Trump is an existential threat to your democracy, then you'll go ahead and mess with the actual democratic process to ensure that the wrong person doesn't get elected. Same thing's happening in Brazil right now, basically. They need to shut down the ability of somebody to go ahead and get around the way that they've set up their elections. And they don't want someone like Elon Musk coming in and endangering that. Now, Musk has gone ahead and made that decision, but it's very clear that the Brazilian government doesn't like this. Ultimately, they probably have the ability to shut down X's reach inside their country to some extent. They've already put Elon under investigation. They've named him as someone they're investigating. They've made wider threats to what could happen. Elon has said that, you know, again, they could lose a bunch of revenue, they would have to maybe go ahead and get their people out of Brazil. They'd have to go ahead and move their any offices they have there to make sure they're not in reach of certain legal ramifications. And so it's a really interesting dynamic because, again, the global American empires use this technique on a regular basis to mess with the elections and the sovereignty of other states. But now that it's possible that someone like Musk could allow this the same effect to happen in the United States or other states like maybe Brazil that the United States doesn't want to happen, then he's this rogue actor who could introduce this dynamic basically anywhere he wants. And that's really important because that means that there is the possibility of true information access. It's not all going to be filtered constantly. There's always this, at least this one pipeline and this really extremely important pipeline that could deliver free speech into areas that otherwise would be completely suppressed during critical events. And no government likes that. That is a threat to their state sovereignty. Again, you can feel however you want about that. I'm not here, supporting Brazil. I'm not here advocating for their state sovereignty and their ability to control and shut up their own people. That's not what I'm doing here. I'm simply explaining a dynamic. No state that relies on popular sovereignty and their ability to manipulate popular sovereignty to stay in control can allow someone like Elon to continue to act inside their country. They simply cannot do it. And so that's why I think that so many of these governments are pushing for censorship, are pushing for the ability to shut down what they label as disinformation or misinformation, because they recognize that the same tools they've used to manipulate other countries could now be turned on them, that this road kind of runs both ways, and that they need to shut this down before it actually impacts their ability to control things. So ironically, in this kind of era of managed democracies that are run by oligarchs, a information autocrat, like a corporate dictator, might be the only thing that I can actually introduce real free speech into the situation. And so that's why I thought, even though I'm, Brazil's a foreign country, I tend not to focus on the internal workings of foreign countries, I thought it was important to look at this example, because the way this dynamic is critical, Brazil is not going to be the last country to do this. In fact, it's very likely that this same dynamic is going to play itself out in the United States as we get closer to election time. And so I think that this is going to matter a lot. Now, obviously, in the United States, things are very different. The level of manipulation is not quite the same. And we have a conservative Supreme Court. The dynamics don't work exactly the same. But the same tactics, the same scaring people about misinformation, disinformation, the same desire to go ahead and censor all political opinion, to more tightly lock down this what was an illusion of free speech, right? Like, I'm sure people in Brazil kind of thought to some extent they had free speech. Maybe they don't. Again, I'm not an expert there. But in the United States, for sure, the illusion of choice was allowed because it kind of kept us from recognizing how totalitarian some things were becoming, and the need to go ahead and tighten down on that has become more and more important. And that's why we've seen the restrictions on speech that we had. We've kind of seen the obvious prosecution of political opponents, the desperate attempts to shut down opposing social media, these kind of things. This is a regular thing now in places that called themselves democracies. People who bought into this idea that popular sovereignty and the will of the people was going to determine who's in charge, and that's what gave you legitimacy. All of those places are kind of simultaneously trying to control information. And that's because they understand that information is really what controls elections. And so they're making sure to make those changes now so that they don't end up in a scenario where another Trump or another Bolsonaro or some other, kind of more right-wing populist gets into power and starts dismantling the bureaucracies that they use to control this system. And that's very important to them. All right, guys. So let's go ahead and take a look at the questions of the people over here real quick. All right. Sorry, I'm going to mispronounce this here. Lavasser. I'll go with that. What if Google went to war with France? I mean, this is a constant problem that's going to continue to exist. Anyone who's not aligned with kind of the global consensus, especially the global American consensus, is going to end up in a real battle. And so you're going to have these corporations engaging in lawfare. If they stand out. Now, most of these corporations are on the side of this thing. In fact, most of them are central to this control. So that's why, Elon having this one node is really important, because you're not really seeing Google actually, battle very many of these places. In fact, they're willing to go ahead and capitulate to the demands of something like Brazil, because in large part they agree. They also don't want to see someone like Trump or Bolsonaro get elected. But there is this real dynamic where the corporation has, if it's run properly, if it has someone who can kind of take total control and make those immediate decisions and not bow to kind of the machine, does have the ability to break through and in a way make an information war on those states. And that is a very interesting dynamic that we're seeing now. Because again, it can happen with the push of a button. It does, you don't have to land your gunboat. You can just go ahead and have people log on. And that can totally change the way that elections go and therefore the way that people see the legitimacy of your government. Creepy Weirdo says, did you hear the French, the Fresh Prince theme? It's a little bit scuffed, almost like it's being remixed or degraded. I think that Academic Agent is correct. That's what he's referencing, Academic Agent's famous Return to Fresh Prince. I think he's correct that to some extent that the left would like to do this, but like I said, I just don't think that's happening. Now, I don't know how events in Brazil really play into that theory, but I just would say that I think that they would like the containment to return if they could get it. The problem is that their vanguard is too rabid. They bought into the cool, you know, they drank the Kool-Aid. They really believe in a lot of things that they believe. And I think some of the sheen has come off their kind of a containment system. I think that the way that they've pushed things too much with Trump and Bolsonaro and others has made it clear to people what's going on. And some percentage of the people aren't just going to go back to pretending like everything is fine, even if they did try to pull the containment thing. Though I'm sure that would be a better move if they could. Let's see. Friend Lee says, I've gotten two interviews through New Founding. It's legit. Sign up. Also, FYI, it's not backslash. Sorry. I did say backslash in that commercial. It's just a slash. Should be the way I should say that. But yeah, New Founding doing good work, guys. They are finding ways to place people. If you want to go ahead and, especially employers, right? Employees, obviously, they're just joining the network trying to go ahead and find a based employer. But employers, it's on you, right? You can talk a good game. You can talk about how you want the world to change. You can talk about, why don't we have power or control or all these things? But if you're sitting there hiring a bunch of people who hate your guts through all of these old systems, legitimating the power that the left has over a lot of these things, you're not really changing the game. So you need to take, go ahead and take a chance. You're not even really taking a chance. You're just investing in what's probably a higher quality of person by going through something like New Founding, which is going to deliver a far better quality of candidates who don't, actually hate your country and hate your way of life. All right, guys. Well, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. As always, thank you for coming by. If you'd like to go ahead and get these broadcasts as podcasts, you need to go ahead and go to the Orrin McIntyre Show on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe there. And of course, if you haven't subscribed to the YouTube channel, you need to do that. If you do, make sure that you go ahead and click the notifications and the bell and everything so that you know when these streams go live. And of course, if you'd like to understand in even more depth what's happening with our managerial elite, what's happening with the bureaucratic class and the way that they are now controlling our governments, you need to go ahead and get my book, The Total State, which is coming out May 7th. You can pre-order that in places like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. Large retailers usually have the link there for you to do that. All right, guys, thank you once again for coming by. And as always, I'll talk to you next time.